Ohio Health.
Well, good morning again. It's Monday morning. I hope you're having a wonderful morning. This is Glenn Coble, and the show is called A Progressive Life. And we're a little bit cold, and it's going to get colder. As you were just listening to Scott talk about the how chilly it's going to be, that negative 12 didn't sound good at all. I've been struggling with a cold. It's been some sort of a virus or something for the last over 3 weeks. It comes and it goes, and I finally seems like I've kicked its butt, or it's kicked my butt. The problem with it is that I'm real lethargic. I feel real run down and stuff like that. But hopefully, everything will turn out better and better and better. I can't honestly say I've been working very hard on my program the last 3 weeks. I've been basically laying on the couch with the dog coughing. And the coughing is what scares me. I had a heart attack 5 years ago or something like that. And I'm a little nervous about coughing because, you know, that puts stress on your heart. And so far, I'm haven't seemed to had any negative feelings about it. Hey, if you want to call in, the phone number here, by the way, is 740-383-9944. And I'd be glad to take any calls today. We're going to kind of ramble along. I've been trying to give you incidents in my life so you get to know me a little bit better that have been kind of fun. And this morning, I really am. My brain is a blank, and it became a blank about 3 weeks ago when the virus hit me. I'm going to ramble some more and try and tell you about some of the things that I've been lucky enough to do. And one of the things that probably was the highlight of my youth was playing in this folk trio, and we've talked about it before. But lots of people don't understand how much you learn from playing in a group. You learn how to deal with other people. You learn how to deal with yourself. You learn how to do all sorts of tasks that you didn't know you could do. My biggest problem was memorizing. Always have had problems memorizing. It was great fun. And the neat thing about it was getting to meet the hundreds, if not thousands, of people that we got to meet with this folk trio. It lasted about 9 years, I think it was, from the time I was a junior in high school through the Army and then some beyond that. We had a group of three guys. We sang music like the Kingston Trio, if you remember them. If you don't remember them, it was... I'm trying to think of any modern groups that are anywhere near that. There really aren't any modern groups that sound like them, but we called ourselves the Overland Singers. It was kind of interesting. We started out calling ourselves the Lemon Lighters. We thought we were being funny because there was a group out called the Lime Lighters, so we thought we'd call ourselves the Lemon Lighters. We were invited to cut a record album, and the people at WGN who paid for the record album told us that's a stupid name. And we said okay, and we came up with the Overland Singers. And the reason why we did is we went out to WGN, which was out on the north side of Chicago, and we were sitting in the lobby waiting to talk about cutting the album, and a young man came in with a backpack on. And back then, in the late 60s, backpacks weren't nearly as well used as they are now. And so it kind of stood out. This young man looked like he was going across country or something. And one of our trio said, that guy's going on an Overland trek. And we all said, Overland, hey, that's a good idea. Overland Singers. So that's what we called ourselves. And as a matter of fact, there you can occasionally still find our one of our two albums on Amazon if you're willing to pay the $35 or whatever it is at the time that they're selling them for. And it was great times. The fun thing was we put on shows we called Hootenannies. Now, I'm sure many of you don't remember the show Hootenanny on TV because it was a 60s show. But we would put on Hootenannies, and a Hootenanny was you just sang music and you encouraged the crowd to sing with you. And most of the songs were folk songs were pretty familiar to people back then, and they'd sing right along and sing the chorus with you, and it was great fun. And we'd invite family and friends and anybody who wanted to come, and we usually did it in a local theater, and we would sing for about 3 hours, I think, and we would sing every song we knew. It was great education because it kept us in practice. It also kept us memorizing the lyrics, and it educated our theatrical senses. I was always quite theatrical. I never had any problem at all showing off. And to this day, you can ask my wife. She will tell you I still show off. The other two weren't nearly as much outgoing. They had outgoing. They were outgoing, but not nearly as much as I was. Joe Peterson, who, by the way, is still a beautiful singer. He has a gorgeous voice, and he writes and records songs. He became a sound studio artist and recorded for people like Hoyt Axton and stuff like that. And so he became quite successful in that. And Bob became quite successful in music. He was a member of the touring group of Phantom of the Opera for years. I was the least proficient at the singing arts. My voice was one of those voices that blended very well, and I had good pitch, and I was able to blend with the other two. But if I had to sing a solo, you probably wouldn't stay in the room. It was just a kind of a childish sounding voice. One of the fun parts of being in the group was lots of girls. There were always lots of girls around that wanted us to sing. We were, I would say, quite innocent, the three of us. So it wasn't like that. It was that girls just like hearing us sing. We were all young, thin, all pretty good-looking guys. So we had lots of girls around that would, just wanted to know who we are. And they would come to, we had one concert that was well over 300 people at the concert, and it was a regional Girl Scout outing, and that was great fun. We spent 3 hours there, and probably about 25-30 minutes of it was signing autographs at the end of the day. To this day, I've often wondered, what in the world do people do with autographs? I know some people put them in books, and if they're important people, I guess you can sell the autograph. But we were anything but important people. But we signed an awful lot of autographs just because we had cut a couple albums and because people knew us regionally, yeah, in the Chicagoland area. People knew us from probably Wisconsin down all over Indiana and Illinois and Michigan, that sort of thing. Great fun, though. The great fun about it is that everybody wanted to know who you were. And I always liked having people want to know who I was. I've always been, I guess, that type of person. I'm sure that's damning myself with faint praise there. We would quite often do, well, we almost every weekend had a gig that we'd go out and do. And we would play the gig and sign autographs and sell albums. We sold our own albums and had a wonderful time doing it. We listened to folk music constantly, trying to pick up new songs. And some of the songs were, you would know them. Many of the songs you wouldn't. We had a kind of an eclectic choice of songs. We went from very melancholy songs to really bright, crazy songs. Like, what was the name of it? Old Joe Clark. Old Joe Clark Goes Downtown Backwards. People Ask Him Why. And songs like The MTA, which is all about Charlie going down to the Scully Square station every day about 2:15, and through the open window his wife handed him his sandwich and something or other. Anyway, that was those are pretty wild songs. And then there were the songs that were the sad songs, the Raspberry Strawberry songs. And Raspberry Strawberries is, a lot of the songs are starting to get into the war. Vietnam War was going on, and a lot of the songs that we were singing were anti-war songs, which I still enjoy quite a bit. I think it molded my young life, having also being a minister's son. I wouldn't say I was a pacifist, but I was pretty anti-war, and partly because there was a possibility I was going to go there, but also because of my father and mother's belief that war did no good. War did nothing but evil. And so anyway, we did a lot of anti-war songs, a lot of Bob Dylan stuff. But at that time, it was the Beatles popped in, and they kind of took away the folk sound, and it became the English Revival. And so we kind of lost out. But we still continued to sing together for a while and made a pretty good career out of singing together. We got to sing with, I've talked about in the past, we've got to sing with the United States Army Field Band as a featured act there, which was always fun, because they would feature us, usually a 3-song set, and we'd sing it together. And that's how we stayed out of Vietnam. Sang with the United States Army Field Band, which is the traveling band of the Army. There are 2 bands in the Army. One band is called the Army Field Band, and the other band is called the Army Band. And the Army Band is based out, I believe, out of Fort Myer, outside of Washington, D.C., and we were based out of Fort Meade, outside of Washington, D.C., both of which are national bands. But one stays at home and does all the ceremonial stuff, and the other one travels all over the world and does stuff to interest people in being in the Army. And that was the group that we were in. It was kind of interesting. You'd 6 months of the year, you'd go out on the road. 6 months of the year, you'd be at home singing. My duty hours were usually 8 o'clock in the morning to 11 o'clock in the morning, and then we were done for the day when we were at Fort Meade. But when we were on the road, our duty hours were all day long, all night long. We were on call. We played all the time. We played gigs like we played the Hollywood Bowl. We played in a little town called, it wasn't that little a town, Caracas, Nicaragua. We played in Quito, Ecuador. We played in Panama City, Panama. We played all over the Virgin Islands. Plus, we played all, I think, we played all continent. Yes, we played every continental state. We did not play Alaska or Hawaii at the time. I guess probably because you had to fly to those places. And pretty much we went everywhere by bus, which gave you quite an education. You learned how to play bridge on a bus because there was nothing else to do. We enjoyed it, but it got to be a little bit boring. And that's one of the things people don't know about traveling with a band. It looks much better from the outside than it looks from the inside. Another position that I've held in intercollegiate athletics, people always would say to me, Glenn, you must have had a wonderful time. You were assistant athletic director at two major universities, and you got to see all the games, and you got to do this, and you got to do that. Yeah, it's fun for the first few months, and then it starts to get quite old, working 80 hours a week and doing all sorts of things that people have no idea that you do just to keep the string of events going. In athletics, you have to plan all the games. You have to be at all the games. You have to then stay way after all the games to make sure everything's put back up. Then you have to get ready for the next game. In music, it's basically the same thing. You go to work, play your gig, then you have to get all the equipment put up. Then immediately the next day you have to start rehearsing, because if you don't rehearse, you don't keep a good sound. There's just no two ways about it. You have to rehearse daily, and you have to rehearse intensely, and you have to difficult. That's another problem you have with all of these jobs that seem so exciting. Everybody wants to do the job, so there's always pressure on you to keep doing it well. If you don't do it well, you won't be doing it long. Also, you have to find ways to get along with the people that you're trying to make music with or develop sporting events with. And if you're with them 80 hours a week in the night and in the day and all sorts of times, it tends to get a little close. I remember one of the times, and probably the beginning of the breakup of our folk trio, we were doing a show on TV, I think it was, and we went to a commercial break, and Joe, our lead singer, gave me a dirty look, and I didn't know why. And I said, if you ever look at me like that again, I'm going to punch you in the face. Poor Joe. He had no idea where that came from, nor did I, quite frankly. It was just that I was tired of being around the other two guys constantly, and I had just had enough that day, and that kind of wrecked our relationship for a while, and eventually, I believe, led to the demise of the trio. But that happens all the time. Familiarity breeds contempt, and I'm sure I mispronounced that, but it does, because it just gets to be so routine being with each other, and you get so tired of hearing the same old stories from each other, and you get tired of, well, it's like marriage. You do get tired occasionally of hearing the same old complaints. When you're in a folk trio or in a band, or you're in a group that plays together, a sporting team, you hear the same things day in and day out. You have to find ways to get around that. Anyway, that's pretty much my little spiel for the day on my life. And being the nice thing about it is, every time I was able to do something, I was able to move on from it and move up from it. And I rarely had setbacks as far as having to start over or having people. I did not have a lot of failure. Let's put it that way. That sounds terribly egotistical, but I think some people are lucky in that they avoid failure by the training they were giving as young people of how to get along with people. And I am absolutely convinced that I was trained by my mother and father to get along with people. Anyway, I wrote down a few things that I thought maybe we could talk about. Let's see here. One of the things I wrote down is, human progress is neither automatic or inevitable. You can actually stop progress. You can go into the living room, sit down in the chair, and end it all if it's really that severe. But you can just sit there and watch television for, you know, ad nauseum. So human progress isn't automatic. And one of the things, without human progress, whether you're a Christian or a Hindu or an atheist, the joy of life seems to, excuse me, there's that cough. The joy of life seems to go away. I always try to find something new to do just to give me the joy of living. Every step toward the goal of justice requires sacrifice. It requires suffering and struggle. And there's nothing wrong with any of those things. This is exactly the way Martin Luther King said it. Human progress is neither automatic nor inevitable. Every step toward the goal of justice requires sacrifice, suffering, and struggle. The tireless exertion and passionate concern of dedicated individuals. That's how we move forward. People care about things. People care about other people. And if you cease to care about other people and other things, you tend to go sit on that couch and do nothing. And what good does that do? Well, you sit there and let your life go by in front of your face, and nothing happens. And I find it's unacceptable not to have something to do to move forward. And I think most people find it more acceptable. Even if they're struggling, it's better than if they're just laying around. One of the things I found that seemed to help me all my life, I've been using self-evaluation. Not self-criticism. I think self-criticism is totally negative. Self-evaluation, it's where you think about something. You want to be a better human being. Well, what do you do right now to be a better human being? Well, if I'm sitting on the couch, I'm not doing anything. But if I get up and go outside and, clean up my driveway, at least I'm doing something to make other people around me feel better, to make me feel better, to keep the place clean. So I believe that self-evaluation is probably the key ingredient for me to enjoy life. I love, and you can't allow yourself to say, I'm no good. Self-evaluation doesn't mean that. That's just self-criticism. There is only one person that you can make better, and that one person is you. You can try to make your kids better, and you, by example and by deed and by example, you can make your family, the closest to you, you can let them see what works. But truly, if you're going to make someone better, the person you can make better is yourself. And by making yourself better, you will make others better. There are enemies to our progress. If you want to be progressive, which I always have wanted to be, and I can't imagine people not wanting to progress. I know there are a lot of people right now in this world that want to go back. They want to live life the way it was in the 50s and 60s. And it sounds wonderful, but if you go back into the 50s and 60s and find out that the highest tax bracket was 90% for people, you'd be surprised. You may not want to go back there. There's always good and bad. So the enemies of progress, these are some of the enemies of progress. I believe we should all hope for progress. One of the enemies is worry. If you are always saying the sky is falling, the sky is falling, the only thing you're doing is worrying about something that probably will never happen. And that makes your life miserable, which brings people around you down, brings yourself down, and drives you to that stupid couch that you're going to go sit on. Gloating over victories. Like, I was thinking about that this week because the Democratic Party had a pretty sizable victory over the president, where with the closing down of the with the opening up of the government, but to gloat about it absolutely gets nothing done. You should accept whatever positives you can and move forward rather than moving into a gloating term. Gloating will do nothing. It'll make the opponent angry, and it'll make you complacent. And complacency is also one of those things that is the enemy of progress. Anger. Now, there's something that'll slow you down dead in your tracks. There is no reason, in my humble belief, and I'm using the term humble there, I'm rarely humble, but in my humble belief, there is little that'll cause you to move backwards more than anger. Anger is where a situation that you put yourself into, and all you do is close the darkness around yourself. Anger does nobody any good. The only person it really affects is you. It does, quite often, does not affect the person that you're angry at. Excuse me, I had to sneak off there and cough a little bit. Anger is related to the next thing that I find is an enemy of progress, and that's hate. Hate is one of those things that the main person that is affected by hate is the person that does the hating, not the person that is hated What do they care? They probably don't even know that they're hated, nor do they care. And so, therefore, hate tends to bring down the hater, not the hated. And why do we want to bring other people down anyway? There is no sense in that. If we could build people as opposed to dragging them down, it would help us all. And probably another section of that is an enemy to progress are those people that want to take credit for everything. Let's face it, credit comes by what you do, not what you think or what you say, and credit isn't even worth that much. What are you going to do with credit? Well, if we're talking financial, that's one thing. But there are a lot of people that love that credit. They want the credit. They use it to build their own self-esteem. They use it to build other people's esteem about them, so that people think. Have you watched? I've been watching a lot of politicians lately, obviously, and you watch the people around the politicians. I find it absolutely fascinating to watch the total the total amount of joy and love some of these people give to their heroes, the politicians, totally blindly, without knowing anything about that person. One of the things I learned, having been involved in with a lot of very famous people throughout my life, one of the things I learned is that those people aren't what you think they are. Those people have their own lives. They are not as perfect as everybody around them think. I'm not going to mention the person's name, but we did have a coach once, and this coach thought that everything he did was absolutely perfect, and yet daily he made big mistakes, that really doesn't go very far. I just want, no one is perfect, is what I'm saying, if you want to help yourself get ahead, the best thing to do is assume that what you've done, you have done. Okay, and then move on and try to make the next step even stronger. If you win, you know, the national championship, where are you going to go from the national championship? So you have to find other ways of enjoying being active and strong and a decisive leader. I find that I get most of my joy from watching people around me who succeed, not because I told them what to do, but because they learned what to do and had followed some of the things that I helped them do. We just had and I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, I had a wonderful evening with three of my former students. And one of the things I really enjoyed that evening, we talked about other students that we all knew and we had been following on Facebook. But we talked about them and talked about how we had learned from each other. Many of these young people, they were young people at the time, didn't realize that I was learning as much from them as they were learning from me. And that is really the joy of life, as I see it. Learning, moving forward and learning. If you do nothing else in this world, learning more skill, learning more how to love people more, learning how to treat people better, all these things that you can learn to do that are positive will make you a better human being and make you feel better. Excuse me. It's hard to imagine how you can feel better than a day where you've helped somebody get through some struggle when the day began, you knew nothing about, but when the day was over, you helped somebody get through a struggle that they had been fighting with for, you know, weeks. I found another interesting quote. This one's not from, this is not from Martin Luther King. This one is from Shannon Alder. Your strength will be found when you stop struggling with yourself instead of thinking everyone is struggling worth overcoming. Everyone else's struggling is worth overcoming. Every obstacle in life is a lesson that teaches us, not others. Every obstacle in life is a lesson that teaches us, not others. It teaches us. Only you, again, we're going back to the only person that you can do anything about is yourself. Here's a great quote from Mother Teresa I have a notebook that I carried. Oh, I'd guess there were probably 500 quotations in, and this was always one of them that I quoted if people asked about good quotes. This is Mother Teresa. We shall never know all the good that a simple smile can do. Have you ever watched television and watched some of these ads with the little kids? And I mean, they're actors, of course, but some director tells them to smile at their mom and dad, and they smile, and that smile just lights up the entire stage or the TV. I love to watch kids smile. Another quote that I saved from this week is, change will not come if we wait for some other person or some other time. We are the ones we've been waiting for. We are the change that we seek. And that was Barack Obama. We are the change that we seek. And when he says that, he means you are the change that you seek. Excuse me. I'm so sorry about all the the coughing and the sniffling, but I'm getting through it. I'm going to be better. And in 8 minutes, I'm going to go home and drink some hot coffee and some hot tea or something and get this out of my system. I hope that you can see a little bit towards being more progressive in your life. If you can find ways to move forward rather than standing still or moving backward, I think you'll find it much more rewarding to yourself. A step forward, even sometimes when you make a step forward and it's wrong, or it doesn't work out, let's put it that way. It may not be wrong. It may just not work out. When you make those steps forward, the pride you have in yourself, the pride you have as a human animal, makes it worthwhile. I love to find movement when I have it. When I was running for office, I would find things that I said to people that I thought, well, now that was a good thing to say. Now I also did the other. And if I did that, the other, I tried to let those people know that I was wrong or that I thought I was wrong. But I rarely had that problem because I listened to a lot of very intelligent people. Not that I am, but I listened to a lot of of very intelligent people and try to mimic what they say. But we need to find a way to keep moving forward rather than backwards. If we had moved backwards from the beginning of time, we would never have invented fire or discovered fire. We wouldn't have invented the wheel. We wouldn't even have governments. I understand there are people that probably say that's not a bad thing. But I think most governments are, I mean, democracies tend to be a positive for the human situation. If you don't have any organization and you don't know where you're going nowhere. I believe that we need to organize, even if, and I tend to be fiscally conservative, but being fiscally conservative doesn't mean I don't want to spend a dime. And we do have people in this world and in this government that don't want to spend a dime, unless it's on something they want. So you also have to critically judge where you're coming from when you decide that you're going to be a fiscal conservative. You should find things that you can positively affect without necessarily as much money as some people want to spend. Make sure you look at why are you doing things. That will always help you. If you just want to do something because it looks like fun, think about it. You may be doing it because of reasons you probably wouldn't be proud of after the fact. Do things for a good reason. Don't do them for a negative reason. One of the things I wanted to mention, a lady in Columbus was just approved. I believe she's going to become a citizen of the United States, being removed from the ICE entrappings that she had become. She had called for and received sanctuary from a church in Columbus, and I was really happy to see that she now is going to get that. She did get the sanctuary, she will become a citizen. My son and daughter-in-law are both at the Mennonite Church of Columbus, and they have a young woman that is doing the same thing, and I hope for her sake that she will be one of the next ones to be honored with citizenship. I think there are three, including the one that just received the opportunity to become a citizen. I believe there are three women in Columbus that are in sanctuary. And it seems odd that we still have churches as sanctuaries for political dissidents, but we do. I hope that all three of them find a way to become citizens, because all three of them, from what I understand, are doing this totally out of an honorable stance of wanting to be American citizens and wanting for their family good luck. And anyway, that's I happened to notice that on the news, and I'm real proud of the lady and that's at the Columbus Mennonite Church, and I'm proud that my son and daughter-in-law and their family have been supporting this woman and her sanctuary. Now, it's kind of a difficult thing where you have to live in a church and be helped by all the church members. She can't go outside the church without fear that she will be chased down by ICE and sent back to wherever her home country is. And she really seeks sanctuary because of the horrible things that were going on in her country. Anyway, the weather is going to be rough this week, so make sure you keep yourself well bundled up. I guess today it's supposed to get up in the 40s for a short period of time, and then it's going to be in the sub-zero range. Sounds like a horrible day. Anyway, I hope you have a wonderful week. I hope next week when we get back together again, I understand the weather's supposed to be picking up next week a little bit, getting a little warmer. That's what we want to hear, and that's where we're going to go. And I hope that you have a wonderful week and you have a wonderful joy and progressive life and move forward with you, your family, your loved ones. And you're listening to Glenn Coble on A Progressive Life, and we hope to talk to you again next Monday morning. Bye-bye.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, LP, Marion, Ohio, The Talking Place. For people like legendary comedian Shecky Green telling the funniest talk show story of all time about guest starring on Fantasy Island.
It all started.
I was late.
Yes.
And as I always am for everything I do. And they were waiting for me. And he came up to me. He said, I want to tell you something. Did you know you made us wait? You know, I said, well, I'm very sorry, and I didn't realize my call was for later and everything. Then I sat down, and his wife came up to me, and she says to me, Shecky, I'm everybody's wife, and they had just gotten married, by the way. And she said, beautiful girl. And she said to me, would you like a cup of coffee? I said, I would love it, thank you. And he says, Adrian, I want to tell you, don't talk to my wife, that's my wife. You understand?